The time is 2 o'clock. Good afternoon, I'm Hui. After nearly 2 weeks of war in Ukraine, Russia has gone virtually all in for the assault. A senior U.S. defense official says Moscow has deployed 95% of the forces that were positioned at the border and launched about 600 missiles. Russian leader Vladimir Putin had cited genocide as a basis for the invasion. Ukraine is asking the International Court of Justice for an emergency ruling to stop the incursion. Julie Yu reports.
Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, is digging in as Russian forces inch ever closer. The airport of Vinnytsia is the latest to fall to the invaders. They've already seized Europe's largest nuclear power plant, the Zaporizhia facility. Fears are the port city of Odessa will be hit next. Russia's military wields a powerful edge with formidable fighter jets giving air coverage. Ukraine's leader has again appealed to NATO to declare a no-fly zone over Europe to curb Moscow's advantage. But the military alliance has resisted, fearing a wider conflict. It remains a proxy war for NATO and the U.S., which are trying to boost Ukraine's air power instead. Washington will exchange its F-16s for Poland's Russian-made MiG-29s. The MiG-29s will be given to the Ukrainians as their pilots are familiar with it.
Meanwhile, Russia is reportedly recruiting Syrian fighters to its cause. U.S. officials have told the Wall Street Journal that Moscow is recruiting fighters experienced in urban combat as it intensifies its assault on Ukraine. Some are already in Russia waiting to enter Ukraine, although it was not immediately clear how many combatants have been recruited. Russia entered the Syrian civil war in 2015 on the side of President Bashar al-Assad's regime. Syria has been mired in a conflict marked by urban combat for more than a decade. Foreign fighters have already entered the Ukrainian conflict on both sides. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba claims around 20,000 foreign volunteers have joined Kyiv's forces. The capital and the second largest city, Kharkiv, are still held by Ukraine's government, while Russia has seized the port city of Kherson and stepped up its shelling of urban centres across the country. Australia has announced that a new multi-billion dollar submarine base will be built on its east coast. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says it will enhance the country's strategic deterrent capability. The massive project comes as Mr. Morrison warns the Ukraine war will inevitably stretch to the Indo-Pacific. Here's Mr. Morrison.
This war of choice by Mr. Putin is a reminder that although Australia's focus is the Indo-Pacific, events elsewhere can affect our regional security. The Indo-Pacific remains at the centre of global geostrategic competition. Australia is an Indo-Pacific nation. The future of the Indo-Pacific is our future.
Mr. Morrison also slammed Russia's invasion of Ukraine, calling the move an act of autocrats. He is expecting the Kremlin to continue their brutal attacks on civilians and nuclear facilities. Here's Mr. Morrison again.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine is a gross violation of international law and the UN Charter. Russia's actions have been and should be condemned by all members of the international community.
New Zealand has just announced sanctions on Russia oligarchs and a travel ban list of 100 people. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says the sanctions will prevent Russian people and companies from moving money and assets to New Zealand to escape other sanctions. She says the government will also stop super yachts, ships and aircraft from entering New Zealand waters or airspace. China is being pressured to do more to get Russia to stop the invasion and pull back its forces. It's already facing criticism from the West for tacitly approving Moscow's actions. According to political observers, the war in Ukraine is testing Beijing's ties with Moscow. They cite Beijing's decision to abstain from condemning Russia's invasion at both the UN General Assembly and the UN Security Council instead of voting against it as an example. China has also backed direct talks between Ukraine and Russia. A clearer picture of China's plans might be seen when Foreign Minister Wang Yi holds his annual media conference later this afternoon. Here's Lo Min-min with more.
Everyone is waiting to see if Foreign Minister Wang Yi will come out more strongly and state more clearly China's position on Ukraine. And that's because they have sat rather unconvincingly on the fence. They have paid lip service to national sovereignty because of their own security concerns around separatist movements in Xinjiang, Tibet and Taiwan. And yet they've also said that Russia's security concerns around an expanding NATO is also valid. But of course, front and center of China's attention, I think, will be the US. If you've been paying attention to the Chinese foreign minister the press briefings in the past, they have piled a lot of blame on the US for nearly everything that they see as going wrong on the international arena. And there's concern that the Quad, for example, could eventually move towards a formal military alliance. And that is a major threat to China because of the geographical locations of these countries. They could effectively encircle China. India and Japan pressing in from the east and west. Australia potentially cutting China off the South China Sea and the Malacca Strait, especially with the AUKUS Defense Pact in place now. So China sees all of this as a provocation from the US. And so I think we can expect some strong language on the US today.
India's Uttar Pradesh state has entered its final day of voting. The state is considered a bellwether for national politics and could determine the fortunes of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party or the BJP ahead of a general election in 2024. More than 600 candidates are battling for 54 seats. The BJP has exceptional influence in one of those districts of Varanasi, which is Mr. Modi's home constituency. Opinion polls conducted before voting began last month mostly predicted the BJP will return to power in the state. But such polls are not always accurate in India, and exit polls can only be published after voting concludes later today. In recent weeks, identity politics has replaced governance issues, even though Mr. Modi has been under fire for his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic and for a sluggish economy. Ishan Garg has more on the importance of Varanasi for Mr. Modi.
Varanasi is not only Prime Minister Modi's parliamentary constituency, the city is also seen as the cultural capital of the country, with many making pilgrimage to the city several times a year. So it's become a very key battleground and one that Prime Minister Modi likes to hold on to. He's been stationed in the city from 3rd to 5th March for 3 days, rallying the troops, conducting various roadshows. And he's told the supporters that it's not really... The question isn't that if BJP is going to win from that city. The question is that BJP is going to win from a massive margin. So it's not only a question of strategic importance by winning the city and showing his Hindu voter base that he's got strong support there, but it's also a matter of pride for the BJP as well. So that's why Varanasi becomes important in that context. But apart from that, the opposition parties, they're also trying very hard to get the votes from the younger voter base in the city, the so-called left-leaning liberal voter base in the city. But many analysts point out that it's highly likely that Prime Minister Modi's party will take the city of Varanasi once again.
The Early Childhood Development Agency has allowed preschools the flexibility to deploy employees across classes or tap on relief staff. This move is aimed at helping the sector cope with a manpower crunch amid a rise in COVID-19 cases. Parliamentary Secretary for the Social and Family Development Ministry, Eric Chua, told Parliament that the government hopes to keep preschools open so that the social impact arising from closures are kept to a minimum. It will also consider issuing test kits to preschool children to help families alleviate the stress of regular testing. Here's Mr. Chua.
In areas where manpower is indeed very tight, such as mother tongue language teachers, such staff may be deployed across preschools subject to prevailing SMMs. In situations where preschools are impacted by substantial staff absenteeism, ECDA works closely with the operators to initiate their business continuity plans, such as adjusting program plans and allowing flexibility in staffing ratios.
The Health Promotion Board will roll out an anti-vaping campaign later this year, targeted at youths and younger adults. The number of offenders caught importing vaporizers jumped nearly 23% in 2021 compared to 2020. Those below the age of 18 accounted for nearly a third of total arrests. Here's Parliamentary Secretary for the Health Ministry, Rahayu Mazlan.
While data on number of offenders may not represent the total number of users, the trend does suggest a general increase in use of vaporizers in Singapore. This worrying trend of increased vaping is also observed internationally. In response, the Ministry of Health will work together with relevant partners and stakeholders to strengthen enforcement measures as well as enhance public education efforts.
And that's the news. For headlines anytime, go to cna.asia.